Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Jeff Yang is here, contributor to the Wall Street Journal Speakeasy blog and the editor of Shattered, the Asian American Comics Anthology. He'll help us discuss notions of Asian beauty. Hiya, Jeff.
Hello.
And the reason, as many of you have already figured out, that we're talking about this is because the newly crowned Miss America is Nina Davaluri, the first Asian American woman ever to wear that crown. She's of Indian descent and is from Syracuse, Miss New York. And as part of the competition, she had to answer a question about her thoughts on plastic surgery in response to TV personality Julie Chen's recent reveal that she had double eyelid plastic surgery to look less Chinese. Here is Julie Chen on the talk explaining why she did that.
And this one big-time agent basically told me the same thing. He said, I cannot represent you unless you get plastic surgery to make your eyes look bigger. And I did it. And I want to show you a side-by-side of how dramatic this surgery really was. I mean, if you look at the after, the eyes are bigger. Mm-hmm. I look more alert.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. Mm-hmm.
More expressive.
More expressive.
So Julie Chen with the reveal and the audience oohs and ahs on the talk. And here's the new Miss America's response to a question explicitly about Julie Chen.
Unfortunately, I don't agree with plastic surgery. However, I can understand that from the standpoint. But more importantly, I've always viewed as Miss America as a girl next door. And the girl next door is evolving as the diversity in America evolves. She's not who she was 10 years ago, and she's not going to be the same person come 10 years down the road. So I wouldn't want to change someone's looks or appearance, but definitely be confident in who you are.
Miss America, Nina Davaluri. So, Jeff Yang.
Yes.
I wish I could communicate to the listeners the faces you were making during those two clips. So why don't we start there?
Yeah. Speaking as a representative of beautiful Asian Americans everywhere, obviously the way that she represented the clips and how they looked and the reaction both among her co-hosts and the audience, it does punch you in the gut. I mean, there's a sense in which, you know, while she's talking about expressiveness and kind of code phrases for a particular kind of appearance that is certainly very different from the one she was born with, she doesn't want to mention race, but race is there. It is about looking, as she said, less Chinese and not just more broadcast ready.
Is there some hope to be taken from the surface of Nina Davaluri's response, characterizing herself as the all-American girl next door, because that's what the Miss America pageant is about. So that can be now an Indian American?
I have to say, I love it when stories collide like this. Last week we were talking about Julie Chen and you know, talking about race and beauty and from one context. And then the fact that the woman who was asked this specific question ends up becoming the next Miss America almost is the perfect climax, the coda to that last week's story. And the fact is, it is truly empowering that somebody who, granted, is absolutely gorgeous, she has no need for plastic surgery because she is as beautiful as you can possibly get, is now the figure, the standard of beauty for America, is really amazing. And yet at the same time, there are even after she was crowned, the instant the tiara touched her head, there were people who were already backlashing against the idea that a woman with her features, her skin color, her background could represent America as a, again, girl next door, 100% American girl.
And we want to hear from Asian American women in particular on the phones in this conversation, 212-433-WNYC, East Asian, South Asian, however you identify yourselves. South Asian American women, does it mean anything to you that Miss America is South Asian? Have any of you felt the kind of pressure that Julie Chen seems to have felt to change your appearance, whether it's surgery or any other way, to look less Asian and more Western, whether or not you're trying to be a big-time TV star? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9673. 9-2. We know you've been talking about with your friends these topics and your family. So give us a call, 212-433-9692, on this important conversation. And Jeff Yang, Asian American women have always been exoticized by Western culture. I think it's not even that they haven't been considered beautiful, if they're beautiful. They've just been reduced to exotic kinds of sex objects, either overly sexualized or infantilized, but not considered the all-American girl next door. Would you put it something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly a very accurate way of describing some of the stereotypes that have been applied to Asian American women. I think that it's interesting that what's leading us to have this conversation is, you know, broadcast journalism and beauty pageants, two places where this whole notion of objectification of women often are larger issues. And yet I think that there's something to be said for this notion that even in those contexts, being able to push beyond this notion of Asian women as attractive because they are, you know, they are so far away from the American norm, because they, you know, represent that loud gong ring and waft of exotic perfume that you associate with the appearance of Asian female stereotypes in movies and television, is, I think, some kind of progress.
What do you think of the adjectives that were used in that Julie Chen clip? More alert, more expressive. Are those true statements on any level, or are they just euphemisms for more Western when you get your eyes widened like that?
It's a very complicated conversation to have. If anybody who trawls the internet and looks at blogs that aggregate these sorts of things know that in Asia, plastic surgery has become a really big thing as well. And in Korea in particular, you have an entire cottage industry of really deft practitioners who can transform your features. I mean, literally transform you into an entirely new being, often you know, with almost like the wave of a wand. And yet when you ask a lot of people who have undergone these procedures, they're not looking to look necessarily Western. They are, however, trying to look younger, trying to look, as you say, more alert, more expressive. So it's often difficult to tease out the cultural context of these things and how many of them these simply spring from a common set of pathologies around wanting to look a certain more youthful and you know, more glamorous way.
Let's take a phone call. Here's Reset. Can I take that call? All right. We'll get to her when that's ready. Hema in Woodbridge, you're on WNYC. Did I say your name right?
Hi. Hi, Brian. I really like your show. I appreciate your show. I really like the discussions on your show.
Thank you.
I've been following your show from office, actually, from the internet. And I am from Indian origin. I'm an Indian living in U.S. for past 8 years, and I never felt that my skin color or my Asian looks had hampered me anyway. So
what do you think when you hear this Julie Chen conversation?
I think it's a personal opinion if you ask me. But then if you are in a show business or industry, you need to follow the norms. But I find I'm comfortable with myself. So I feel it's a personal option, a personal choice.
Thank you very much. And here's another clip from the talk. This is the reaction to Julie Chen in the clip we heard earlier from the other women on the talk.
You made a choice that was good for you, and you have represented, I'm going to say it, your people. You've represented your race. You represented women and your colleagues. Don't look back.
Thank you.
Thing to do.
Don't look back. Well, I think you were beautiful before, you're beautiful now, and it's really whatever makes you happy.
Look, I don't like to live with regrets. I did it. I moved on. No one's more proud of being Chinese than I am.
So those reactions were interesting, Jeff Yang, and maybe it speaks to a certain reality on the ground. I realize it's one group of people and one audience, but maybe even though her agent sounds jerky for saying you have to do this to have big time success, get your eyes widened, or whatever you call that surgery, maybe he was right, that the public is only willing to accept a more Western-looking Asian women on their TVs at a certain level of success.
I think the frightening thing about that perception is that it doesn't track with the realities of where we are as a country or where we are as a world. Demographically, and I think Nina Davalori would be the first to say this, her actual platform was about diversity and cultural competency. We are becoming a country that looks very different from how we looked 50 years ago. And yet a lot of our sensibilities, a lot of our norms, to use that very same term, have not shifted with those times. I think a lot of the reaction from the darker underbelly of the internet towards Nina Davalori's ascension were around this reaction to the idea that America looks different and that Miss America is now looking very different, and that those sensibilities still exist, whether you're talking about on the stage of the talk or whether you're talking about on Twitter, is a little creepy.
Rasat in Fairlawn, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi, it's Rifat. I'm a South Asian American woman, but I also am a sociologist who studies and has interviewed South Asian women. And one of the things that surprised me is that Nina Davalori is a dark-skinned South Asian woman. In our kind of culture and sort of standards of beauty, the lighter your skin color, the better. And that's not just in the American context, that's in South Asia. So for me, it's kind of interesting that even though within the South Asian community, our standards of beauty are around lighter skin, fair skin being more beautiful, that this woman who now represents South Asian women in the United States is a darker skinned person. So I guess that's progress, I think.
I think that's absolutely true. And when I mentioned kind of the norms, the pathological norms that exist around beauty, they're not just in the West. They're not just in America. There are a lot of things that encourage people to think that they're not attractive and awesome just because they don't fit a certain set of standards. And skin color is a big one. Skin color is something that impacts and inflicts harm on multicultural communities as much as it does anywhere else. And one thing to think about here is if you want to talk about how to change norms, maybe that's the way you have to do it. Get people who do look different and who represent beauty, but beauty from a refreshingly different context, to be the faces that we see on television and elsewhere.
Jeff Yang, author of Shattered, the Asian American Comics Anthology, and a contributor to Wall Street Journal's Speakeasy blog, as we talk about the Julie Chen and Nina Davalori, the new Miss America stories. And maybe not all so rosy as Anita on Long Island wants to remind us. Hi, Anita.
Hi, how are you? I love your show.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was really surprised and proud of her for, A, being Miss New York and then becoming Miss America. And it actually, just when I was on hold, I was reminded of, I think it was on your show, about how there were very few African-American models in Fashion Week and how, you know, you have to get people out there in order to represent, to show what beauty can be. And that was really, you know, it was exciting for me to see her. And, like, I think Rifat, I think was her name, the caller who just was on.
Yes.
Yeah, I was surprised because she is darker skinned. And I know that there's several actresses in Bollywood who have a very difficult time because they are darker skinned. So that was amazing. But I'm really proud of her. But even though it is a pageant and that's kind of weird, but anyways,
really, what context are we having this whole conversation in? Anyway, we should be talking about, you know, law firms and
exactly.
Supermarkets and
right. But then the other thing was the backlash was just so like just vitriolic. It was horrible, and it just really reminded me of what it was like for me right after 9/11, being a teacher out here on Long Island, and it was very, very difficult, and. Yes, that was painful, but...
Anita, thank you for all of that. And let's talk for a minute, Jeff, about the racist tweets that followed the Miss America competition. And who knows how prevalent they really were and whether it was, just a dozen racist tweets that BuzzFeed found in a sea of compliments and pushbacks against the racists. It does reveal at least a small strain of very predictable racism. Miss America, you mean Miss 7-Eleven was one of them, stupid things like that. Never mind that she's trying to be a doctor like her father. But do you think that beyond Twitter, Asian people are encountering bold-faced racism like that still on a widespread level? Or what do you take from the whole, you know, racist tweets, pushback against the racist tweets, analysis that there weren't that many racist tweets, conversation of the last day?
Well, I think we do tend to be a little preoccupied with social media. It just makes it so much easier to aggregate the crazy and present it as if it were a random sample. So, yeah, there is some sense in which it's probably an overestimation of how people reacted. But the fact that that reaction is still out there, and if you actually look at who is making who's expressing these things, a lot of college students, a lot of people from the Midwest, the Plains, you know, the middle of America, where diversity is maybe a little bit less robust and present as it is here in New York, let's say. And you think, okay, we can't simply dismiss this as simply, you know, random people in from you know, Crazyville. This is a strain of reaction to the reality of a country that is changing from the top to the bottom. We have, you know, a different family in the White House. We have different people facing us every day when we turn on our various screens. And here we have a different Miss America. And one of the things which I think is definitely true there is it isn't just about, you know, whether or not somebody is beautiful. It's also about whether they're accepted in society at the closest and the highest levels of where we are. And Asian Americans, while we don't necessarily face that bold-faced capital letter racism you see on Twitter all the time, every single day, we definitely still have a ways to go in terms of being accepted in that sense.
Pinuja in New Providence, you're on WNYC. Hello, Pinuja.
Hi, Brian. I love your show. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I actually have to say I was really surprised by my reaction because this whole conversation has just made me so sad. I am someone who was born here in the United States, was raised and educated here. I'm raising my family here. I pay taxes here. And even if it is the crazies, because I do think it's probably true that the Twitter comments represent a lunatic fringe, it just makes me really sad. And it makes me wonder, like, at what point does somebody need to be considered a true American? You know, when can we see past the number of syllables in somebody's last name? I've got a fair number of mine, but I'm a proud American. And I just feel so sad.
Anything that takes us out of our comfort zone, our security, that we are just like everybody else, is sad and is scary. And the prior caller mentioned 9/11, you know, being exposed to a feeling of being different and being foreign and being vulnerable to that in that moment is something that I think a lot of us continue to carry as scars.
And that was one of the tweets that got the most publicity, was why can't we have an American Miss America?
Yes, and that's something which unfortunately we see a lot. You know, a lot of times social media, like again, there's this overreaction, this crazy, and you wish sometimes that there was something like on NASDAQ where you could have like a, you know, halt trading or something right after one of these incidents. But we are, I think, in a time when people are more conscious than ever of this notion of the meaning of America, because that definition is changing, and wanting to build fortresses around their traditional idea of what America looks like.
So if Julie Chen was told by her agent to widen her eyes with plastic surgery, Janine in Park Slope, your agent told you what?
He said I should gain about 250 pounds because I'm dark-skinned black female who's funny, and he could book me more. If I gained weight, it's easier to be like the best fat black best friend or something like that.
Do you still have that agent? Do you still have that agent?
No, I left acting about 6 years ago, and I'm a chef, and I'm a fitness enthusiast. So it just, I'm still funny.
And thank you very much for adding. And Jeff, before we run out of time, I want to read this comment that came in from a listener, Liz in Westchester, that I think is important. And she writes, please address the issue of the concerns of the Asian male stereotype. I have two Chinese children, a boy and a girl, and worry so much more about the way my son perceives himself and is perceived by others in our society than I do about my daughter.
Mm. Well, yes. I mean, I am male and I'm Asian. And this is something that comes up a lot. When we think about the contexts here, yes. I mean, there are a lot of issues around the depiction of Asian women in popular culture. But at the same time, if you look at even Miss America as a single data point, 3 out of the 5 finalists in the Miss America pageant were Asian American. And 5 candidates for the crown were Asian American. So there are more Asian Americans than ever before in history on that stage. And yet when you look at Asian males, there isn't necessarily a counterpart stage on which we can walk and tear up and wear our banners. I'm not saying, of course, that, you know, that necessarily is what's going to validate us in society. But there is some truth to the fact that Asian American men are even more invisible to popular culture. And when we're represented, the representations are even poorer.
I want to thank all our wonderful callers to this segment. Everybody else who's been listening, you can keep posting and have this conversation at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And we thank Jeff Yang, contributor to the Wall Street Journal Speakeasy blog and the editor of Shattered, the Asian American Comics Anthology. Jeff, always great. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer and WNYC, still to come today. Why are so many special ed kids taken to emergency rooms during the school day? Beth Fertig on her WNYC investigative report. The Pulitzer Prize-winning Associated Press duo who revealed the NYPD's Muslim demographics unit and how the New York art scene interacts with the New York real estate scene, all still to come. But right now, it's the latest news. Here's Richard Hake.